This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillahi khaliq al-wujud min al-adam. Mujahil al-nuri min al-ghulam. Famukhrij al-sabri min al-alam. Humulqi al-tawbati ala al-nadam. Fanashkuruhu ala al-masaibi kama nashkuruhu ala al-ni'am. ونصلي على رسوله الأكرم ذي الشرف الأشم والنور الأتم والكتاب المحكم وكمال النبيين والخاتم سيد ولد آدم الذي بشر به عيسى بن مريم ودعا لبعثته إبراهيم عليه السلام حين كان يرفع قواعد بيت الله المحرم فصلى الله عليه وسلم وعلى أتباعه خير الأمم الذين بارك الله بهم كافة الناس العرب منهم والعجم الحمد لله الذي لم يتخذ ولدا ولم يكن له شريك في الملك ولم يكن له ولي من الذل وكبره تكبيرا والحمد لله الذي أنزل على عبده الكتاب ولم يجعل له عوجا والحمد لله الذي نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونؤمن به ونتوكل عليه ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له ونشهد أن محمدًا عبد الله ورسوله أرسله الله تعالى بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله وكفى بالله شهيدا فصلى الله عليه وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا أما بعد فإن أصدق الحديث كتاب الله وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وإن شر الأمور محدثاتها وإن كل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار قال الله عز وجل في كتابه الكريم بعد أن أقول أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وإذ أخذنا ميثاقكم لا تسفكون دماءكم ولا تخرجون أنفسكم من دياركم ثم أقررتم وأنتم تشهدون ثم أنتم هؤلاء تقتلون أنفسكم وتخرجون فريقا منكم من ديارهم تظاهرون عليهم بالإثم والعدوان وإن يأتوكم أسارى تفادوهم وهو محرم عليكم إخراجهم أفتؤمنون ببعض الكتاب وتكفرون ببعض فما جزاء من يفعل ذلك منكم إلا خزي في الحياة الدنيا ويوم القيامة يردون إلى أشد العذاب وما الله بغافل عما تعملون رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي اللهم ثبتنا عند الموت بلا إله إلا الله اللهم اجعلنا من الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر آمين يا رب العالمين I've chosen a difficult topic for this khutbah, but I think we find ourselves, the ummah finds itself over and over in situations that call for us to remind ourselves of some things that are harsh realities. And I think everyone's aware of the kind of political turmoil that is taking place in several countries, especially in Afghanistan nowadays. And people look for answers to how to process this and what should be our stance. And people look to those who they turn to for learning something about the Book of Allah or the Sunnah of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So I want to start first with a disclaimer. People that study Allah's religion, I'm not even including myself because I'm nowhere near a scholar, but people that are even scholarly, that are far beyond the level of scholarship that I could ever reach, they aren't necessarily political scientists. They don't necessarily understand the social, cultural, political, economic, military, strategic background of a situation, because a situation is never in this world, a situation is never black and white. Situations aren't even black and white inside of our homes. Like, even if there's a conflict between you and your brother, or you and your spouse, it's never one or the other. It's not a simple one-line solution. This one is wrong, this one is right. It's always complicated. And when we're talking about geopolitical conflicts and we're talking about conflicts within inside a country with so many players at stake, then there are complications. There is, you know, and what makes things easier for somebody is to put blame on one side or the other side just to be able to say, okay, you know what, this is the right position, this is the wrong position. And in doing so, in creating oversimplified answers, in creating that, we justify a lot of the wrong things that we end up doing and saying and even thinking. And a lot of that is based not on full information, it's based on bits and pieces of information that we try to piece together. And on top of all of that, the thing is that I can have certain opinions and analysis and my own thoughts on what's going on in a situation, but I'm only limited in how informed I am. I don't know enough. So based on what little I know, I formulate an opinion. And somebody else, whatever little they know, they formulate their opinion. And of course, their background, who they're listening to, who they're influenced by, also helps formulate their opinion. So you could have people that are studying the same deen, that are learning the same religion, that are scholars in their own right, but they end up having two extremely different political analyses of the same situation. And what Muslims do, unfortunately, is they think of scholarship, religious scholarship, as somehow the political leadership, that they're going to have the answer for how to solve a world crisis. Or if their comment isn't there, or if their analysis isn't there, what in the world are we going to do? Well, no, that's not how the world works. And this is why for any serious conflict, you go to the people that have understood that conflict deeply. Any serious issue, you don't go to an Islamic scholar when you have a cardiology, you have a heart condition. You say, I need to go to a mufti. No, you go to a cardiologist. You have a legal issue. You have a business legal issue. You don't go to a mufti. You go to a lawyer. You go to someone who studied the issue and understands the law and understands what to, how to solve that situation, because it's important to you. It's important that you find the right solution. You ask the right people. But somehow we've created a narrative and a thought process in the ummah where people that are talking about Quran, they're talking about the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ, they're talking about fiqh, they're talking about hadith, they're talking about the right and wrong that was revealed by Allah, are somehow supposed to be the political analyst, the sociologist, the anthropologist, the economist for the ummah. It doesn't work like that. What they will offer, however, can be guidance. It can be, here's what's right and here's what's wrong. The way it applies is not a singular effort. What's needed in the ummah, this is even the subject of my khutbah today, it's what I'm saying is a precursor to what I would envision. What I would envision is scholars of different backgrounds within the ummah, scholars of different specializations within the ummah, political scientists, analysts, historians, alongside Islamic scholarship, sit together and discuss and analyze and help Muslims think better and deeper about difficult, complex situations and what should be our stance and what should be our position. This is not a one-man job or a one-woman job. This is not one person's opinion is going to solve the ummah. We have a divergence of opinions, we have a divergence of views, we have a divergence of scholarship and thinking, and until we learn to collaborate and literally create think tanks that can do this, and create discussions that can do this, we're gonna find ourselves in the same situation where somebody just wants to get one line answers, one tweet, one post, one meme that solves the crisis. Ah, I got this one, I can forward it to everybody else. This quest for oversimplistic answers is a huge part of the problem. It shows the lack of maturity that you and I have developed, unfortunately, in looking for the right kinds of answers. And if you don't already know, then you should know the concept of echo chambers. The social media is built on echo chambers. You know how when you search for something on Google or any social media outlet, automatically you start seeing ads that are similar to what you searched for. You know that, right? So your behavior online is being monitored, and then what you're exposed to is catered to your preferences. So you're being tracked, and in a sense, you're being analyzed, and based on your profile, you're being shown things that you would find yourself more in agreement with. So you know what? Things that you wouldn't disagree with or things that might expose you to a different point of view are being blocked from you because you're less likely to engage in that. So what people do is they end up having engagement and conversation and discussions with people who already agree with them. So they never get exposed to another point of view. But that's, again, not my khutbah. This is not intended to be the subject of my khutbah. This is just my own criticism of myself and anybody I deeply care about, that they should not look at complex issues and become worked up without knowledge, without knowing, or without even asking someone who deeply knows and just wanting to have a verdict on what to do and what not to do. But the khutbah today is about something that all Muslims can agree on. Okay, fine. We may have a different way of looking at the same political situation. We may have a different analysis of what really is the problem. You can ask one specialized journalist, they have one analysis, another documentary has a different analysis, you're getting diverging points of view. But you know what, at the end of the day, I and you are Muslims. And because we're Muslims, there are some principles that we all completely agree on. And you know what, in the middle of conflict, we forget those principles. We lose sight of them, they become unimportant. They become, yeah, I know. And I would argue that is the biggest crisis of all. We abandon the word of Allah in times of crisis. When our emotions go high, then the word of Allah and its value goes low. And that's what I'd like to address today. The Quran came in a region, Rasulullah was appointed Allah's final messenger in a region that was tribal. There were people of different tribes, and depending on each tribe had their own, you could say, national identity. And because they had a national identity, as a result of that, they would see themselves as more important or superior, or their trade, you know, interests are more important than the other side. I don't mean to be rude, but if you could just take a walk with the baby, I don't get distracted. I can listen to kids screaming all day, but I don't want other people to get distracted in the khutbah. I sincerely apologize. Okay. So what I was saying was, if we have a, you know, we have a situation where different tribes are there, and in all of these different tribes, they're all looking out for their own interests. Every chance they got to take some property from the other tribe, they would take it. And then the other would say, you know, you did wrong. And then they'd say, no, you did wrong to us 2 generations ago. This is payback for what happened 20 years ago. And then 10 years from then, this is payback for what you guys did. And there's like a chain ping pong reaction back and forth. And there are rivalries and grudges that are carried on for generations that could have been over a sheep or somebody to, you know, cut down a tree they weren't supposed to. And they were ready to kill each other over this stuff. They were ready to fight each other to the death over this stuff. And then Islam comes to these people that are ready to explode against each other. Gang up, us, our tribe versus their tribe. Islam came in this region, and within 2 decades, these same people that have been part of these tribes, different tribes, with their own cultures, with their own grudges, with their own nationalism of their own kind, all of those people, all of a sudden, they develop a new sense of identity. And that identity now is, number one, La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And when they develop that identity, it's not like they no longer belong to this tribe or that tribe. They still belong to those tribes. They still have that tribal history. But somehow, what did Allah say? وَذْكُرُوا نِعْمَةَ اللَّهِ عَلَيْكُمْ إِذْ كُنْتُمْ أَعْدَاءً فَأَلَّفَ بَيْنَ قُلُوبِكُمْ. Mention the favor of Allah on you when you people used to be enemies, and Allah made love happen between your hearts. Allah fused your hearts together. So Allah is telling us that when somebody accepted Islam, when somebody took Shahada, they didn't just accept Allah and His Messenger, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. They accepted that someone else who says La ilaha illallah is now closer to me than any other identification. Any other identification, just because they share the same kalima with me. They became, إِنَّ هَذِهِ أُمَّتُكُمْ أُمَّةً وَاحِدَةً. This is your ummah, this is a single ummah. These people that had so many grudges, you could have 2 Muslims back in the day, in the time of the Prophet ﷺ, 2 Muslims that have taken shahada, and one of them, their grandfather was killed by this one's grandfather, and they're praying next to each other. They're from 2 enemy tribes. They've hated each other their entire life. But once they took shahada, what did Allah do as a gift of that shahada? The gift of La ilaha illallah inside, they no longer see their nationalism or their grudges or their hatred first. They see another fellow believer. They see someone who's migrated to Allah and His Messenger. And the value they have for that is higher than anything else. Higher than anything else. Allah says about the believers, He says, أَشِدَّاءُ عَلَى الْكُفَّارِ رُحَمَاءُ بَيْنَهُمْ. They are severe and intense against disbelievers, and they are loving and caring between themselves. Look at the ummah today. Does that look like our description? Actually, it's flipped. You know, we're caring and loving towards everybody else except Muslims. And the same thing Islam came to destroy. They were shocked. The Arabs were shocked at the time when they saw the Sahaba at Hudaybiyah, and some of them who came to negotiate with the Prophet ﷺ, when they saw people of different tribes, they were like, how are you going to unify these tribes? You think you have an army? These people will go running to their own tribes. They don't see themselves. They're not party. This looks like if you use modern language, this looks like a train station with random people in it. This is not a unified group of people. They're of different ethnicities, different backgrounds, different cultures, different clans. And the clan was a big deal back then. Every clan with its own flag. And yet, those people were more united than any tribe could ever be. This was the power of La ilaha illallah. When the Muslim finds him, his or herself in a time and place where we are constantly in conflict with one another, inside of a country, between countries, You can think about the geopolitics and the political background and the economic circumstances and the underhanded, corrupt you know, dealings that are taking, all of that aside, at the end of the day, in the mind of a Muslim, what's happened now? In the mind of a Muslim, I am Pakistani first, Muslim second. I'm Afghani first, Muslim second. I'm Bangladeshi first, Muslim second. I'm American first, Muslim second. My national identity, my racial identity, my ethnic identity, my tribal identity, that's first, Islam is second. The worst of it comes out when things get to the point of violence and killing. But even before then, Allah did break us up into nations and tribes. That's the wisdom of Allah. He broke us up into different languages and cultures. That's the wisdom of Allah. He did make us different from each other. And yet He did unite us towards one another also. But you know what? Even if you people were the same ethnicity, forget even if you were different ethnicities, if you were different races, different languages, different cultures, even if you were the same genetic blood, even if you were the same, like the Israelites, because they were basically one race, multiple tribes, but still essentially one race, yeah? Then what? Allah said to them, you know, and I read this ayah to you in the beginning in Surah Al-Baqarah, وَإِذَا خَذْنَا مِيثَاقَكُمْ, when we took a promise that's binding on you, لَا تَسْفِكُونَ دِمَاءَكُمْ, you're not going to spill each other's blood. وَلَا تُخْرِجُونَ أَنفُسَكُمْ مِنْ دِيَارِكُمْ, listen to these words and think about what we're doing as an ummah. You're not going to spill each other's blood and you will not expel each other from your homes. Not cause a situation where one has to leave their home. You won't do this to each other. We took this promise from you that you will not create a scenario where you are killing each other and you're causing each other to leave your homes. لَا تُخْرِجُونَ أَنفُسَكُمْ مِنْ دِيَارِكُمْ ثُمَّ أَقْرَرْتُمْ, then all of you agreed. وَأَنْتُمْ تَشْهَدُونَ, and you were all witness to this agreement. Is this an agreement that was only taken from the Israelites? Is this not an agreement that we took also? Al-Muslimu man salima an-nasu min lisanihi wa yadihi. Rasulullah said, the Muslim is someone who other Muslims are safe from their hand and their tongue. Their hand and their tongue. You know what's happened today? In the news, you see Muslims that are not safe from other Muslims' hands. And what you see online is other Muslims are not safe from other people's tongues. That's what we've become. On the ground, not safe from the other's hands. And online, in our interactions, not safe from each other's tongues. The Prophet ﷺ defined the Muslim as someone, first and foremost, other Muslims are safe from them. They feel safe from them. They don't say vile things to them. They don't make assumptions about them. Al-Muslimu man salima an-nas min lisanihi wa yadihi. We're far away from this reality. Far, far away from this reality. And it's painful that Allah told us that the nation before you, that used to be the favored nation, they were فَضَّلْتُكُمْ عَلَى الْعَالَمِينَ. That's Surah Al-Baqarah also. I favored you, Allah said to the Israelites. I favored you over every other nation. I favored you over all of them. And then he said, why were you taken off of that favor? Why did you become cursed? Why did you experience this, you know, why were you deposed from this position? Why were you removed? Because Allah has a principle. You know what a scary principle is? إِن تَتَوَلَّوْ يَسْتَبْدِلْ قَوْمًا غَيْرَكُمْ ثُمَّ لَا يَكُونُوا أَمْثَالَكُمْ. If you turn your backs, He will replace you with a people other than you, and they won't be like you. In other words, they won't do the miserable things you did. Now, what did they do? This, by the way, that ayah, if you turn your backs, Allah will replace you, He was talking to the Muslims. And He's not telling them something in theory. He's already shown them a case study, because the Israelites turned their backs, and He replaced them with the Muslims. He replaced them with the final revelation. He replaced them altogether. But now this replacement is not going to come as a result of a new messenger. This replacement will come, we might even get wiped out because you showed unworthiness as a people. Look at what you did. And what are the kinds of things we shouldn't do? We say this in the Fatiha. We say, غَيْرِ الْمَغْضُوبِ عَلَيْهِمْ وَلَا الضَّالِينَ. Everybody knows it. Every man, woman, and child that's Muslim knows this. We don't want to be the kinds of people who earned your anger. And the Rasulullah would say, the people who earned your anger, Allah's anger, are the people that came before us, the Israelites, who messed up. And how did they mess up? That's in Surah Al-Baqarah. And what are one of the biggest ways they messed up? Allah took a contract from them. You're not going to kill each other. You're not going to expel each other from your homes. You people agreed. You were all witness. ثُمَّ أَنْتُمْ هَؤُلَاءِ تَقْتُلُونَ أَنفُسَكُمْ. And then you are the very same people. You are the very same that are killing each other. وَتُخْرِجُونَ فَرِيقًا مِنْكُمْ مِنْ دِيَارِهِمْ. And you're causing a group among you to be expelled from their homes. تظاهرون عليهم بالإثم والعدوان. You're advancing against them with criminal behavior, criminal intent, with ithm, sinful ways, with out of animosity. You're breaking into people's homes. You're going inside. Well, they're not even feeling safe in their home, so they're leaving. When if you didn't feel safe in your home, if you were terrified that somebody's going to break down your door and do whatever they want with your family and do whatever they want with your property and your child, you would be terrified too. You would want to leave. You would want to get away. If I was in that position, I would want to save my family. I would want to get away. And so when this happens to the Israelites, what did Allah say? وَهُوَ مُحَرَّمٌ عَلَيْكُمْ إِخْرَاجُهُمْ. And getting them out of their homes was haram on you to begin with. It was forbidden on you to do so. A Muslim can never create a scenario, especially not in the name of Islam, a scenario in which even a single Muslim's property, home, safety can be put in jeopardy. One life lost. In the Quran, one life lost, not even a Muslim life, a life lost. Whoever kills a single person or creates a scenario in which a single person got killed. If I caused the stampede, I didn't kill someone, I just caused the stampede. And in that stampede, one person got trampled. One person got killed. That's on me because I caused the stampede. I created it. I created that scenario. My hands have blood on them. If I did that. And what does the Quran say? If you kill one person, فَكَأَنَّمَا قَتَلَ النَّاسَ جَمِيعًا, it is equivalent of killing all of humanity. There's no such thing in Islam as collateral damage. You've heard of collateral damage? Oh, we were bombing a military compound and a few homes were destroyed. That's, you know, friendly fire, collateral damage. The greater good is still that we brought about safety. Safety for what? All the people who didn't get killed. Allegedly. But you know, these things happen. What's our scenario? What's our situation? Look, 90% of the people didn't, 99% of the people didn't die. Only 1% died. Also, those 1% are not that worth it? Their lives don't matter? Their blood was cheap? Because it's worth spilling that blood for the other 99%? Where in Allah's book do you justify this notion of collateral damage or the greater good? And for the greater good, you get to kill somebody. You get to expel somebody from their home. Every single life, and you guys have known, you've heard these things in khutbahs and talks, but we forget them when time of crisis comes. We become nationalists. We become tribalists. We become singular solutions, yell and scream. Step back a second and think, where did we go wrong? How is this even possible? This scenario is only possible when being Muslim just becomes a thing you do, you say, but it doesn't translate into a way of thinking about yourself and everybody around you. Any Muslim, any believer who's laying a hand on any other believer, I don't care what group they belong to, what politics they come from, what military they join, what government they represent, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, that person is not going to stand in front of Allah and say, I was part of this government and I had this instruction. And Allah is not going to ask you about what group you were a part of. He's going to ask you, why did you kill another Muslim? Why did you enter this other person's home? Why did you conspire against this person? Or against this, why did you cause harm? And on that day, we're not going to hide behind, you know, a group shield or a governmental, you know, or a press release that makes it sound, you do the worst things, but you use the best words, right? That's what press releases are. You commit the ugliest crimes, but your press releases make them sound like it's not that bad. Actually makes it sound like it's a good thing. You know what that reminds me of? زَيَّنَ لَهُمُ الشَّيْطَانُ أَعْمَالَهُمْ, Quran says. The devil beautified their ugly deeds to them. They do ugly things and they speak about them in beautiful ways. That's what they do. And so when I read these ayat, and I know as I talk about this, some people will say, I'm siding with one group or siding with the other group. I don't care what you think. Our responsibility is to remind ourselves. I have to remind myself. You have to remind yourself. What we have lost. We have lost the meaning, the practical meaning, the implication of La ilaha illallah. No Muslim should feel happy or overjoyed at even a little bit of damage coming to another Muslim. And what do you find today? People are celebrating. People are celebrating one against the loss of the other against the loss of the first one. Think they deserve it. They deserve it. Tell me, when the Muhajirun, they came to Medina, They were an economic burden on Medina, weren't they? They were. They came as migrants. They didn't have jobs. They didn't bring money with them. They became an economic burden. And in fact, they're culturally very different too. And now they're flooding the population of an already economically struggling Medina. So now the Muslims in Medina, forget Muslims for a moment. The people in Medina are like, these migrants have come in and they're going to cause crime. They're going to take jobs. How are we going to feed our family? We don't even have enough for ourselves. And not only this, they're bringing conflict to our region. They have a problem in Mecca. Now they're bringing war over to Medina. Sound familiar from today's politics? And by the way, the Munafiqun said exactly this. The hypocrites in Medina, the Quran calls them hypocrites, said, these people have come, they are an economic burden, and this is their fight. Why are we getting involved in this fight? Why do we have to care about them? And at one point, they started, actually, even the Muhajirun, the sincere Muhajirun and Ansar, at one point, there were a scuffle between them in the Sira. You know? Bani Mustalaq, after coming back from the small military excursion, one Muhajir, you know, they're traveling in the desert, it's hot, it's, you know, you're on low tolerance when you're on a road trip anyway, you get agitated easily, right? One Muhajir, one Meccan, trips over and bumps into an Ansari, a Medinan, and he pushes him back, and then it turns into a thing, and now all the Meccans are behind this one, all the Medinans are behind that one. They're all Muslims. They fought for the sake of Allah, but all of a sudden, what happened? Nationalism, tribalism is so powerful, it takes a little bit of spark, and you can forget that you were Muslim. And you lined up as Meccan versus Medinan, and they were just about to go at each other, right? And when the Prophet ﷺ was given this news, he said they've said words to each other, because they called each other, Ya'la al-Ansar, Ya'la al-Muhajireen. The one guy, when the Meccan got hit, he said, Muhajireen, meaning Meccans, come on, I need backup, I need my people with me. And the other one said, oh, you want to call your people? I got my people too. Ya'la al-Ansar, helpers. Now Muhajireen and Ansar are beautiful words. They're beautiful. They're words in the Quran. These are you know, awards given to people who migrated for God's sake and people who helped others for Allah's sake. But in this context, those words were being used to create conflict between two Muslims. And the Prophet ﷺ said these words have a stench in them. They have a stink to them. These words are filthy. They used good words, but they used them to what? To incite tribalism, to incite group thinking, to stop thinking like an ummah. And the Prophet ﷺ would put a stop to that. So that is a powerful tendency. Humanity began with one brother killing another. Habil and Qabil. That's how it began. Sibling conflict. You and I, we've seen plenty of family conflict. You've seen fights over inheritance. You've seen fights over whatever, you know, business distribution. You know, wealth, money. You know, why did you give the car to my brother? Why didn't you give the car to me? Why did this sister get married in the more expensive hall? Why did they get the cheaper hall? Conflict happens in families too. But you know what? When we lose sight of what Allah gave us and some very basic fundamental principles, then this thing turns into, we lose sight of what it even means to be a member of this ummah. Every life lost, doesn't matter which side of which border it's on. It's one body. This ummah is one body. Its pain is our pain. Ending a conflict, bringing resolution, making things right, bringing criminals to justice, all of that is our agenda, not one group's agenda versus another group's agenda. We have to think about this thing together. We have to look for solutions together. If that mindset isn't there, and we just need somebody to point fingers at and say, these people did this, these people did that, good luck with finding a solution. Good luck. Conflicts will happen. What did Allah say? فَأَصْلِحُوا بَيْنَهُمَا. Make some kind of peace. Find a way to make peace between people. Find a way to make peace. But when one is engaged in criminal behavior against the other, then everybody has to get together against the criminal element. Everybody should be on one side. That's Allah's principle. The way that applies to one specific situation, I end where I started. The way that applies to one specific situation is not a one-person answer. And if you're looking for a one-person answer, you're part of the problem. You absolutely are part of the problem. If you're looking for a statement from me or for some real sheikh or from somebody who's made the right call and he's made the right statement, no, this is a discussion. And it requires, you cannot solve a problem until you understand the depth of the problem. But if people sincerely come together with one driving motivation, what's the driving motivation? I don't want a single child to lose their parents. I don't want a single parent to lose their child. I don't want any family displaced. I don't want any harm coming to anyone. We need to end harm coming. We need to bring an end to this injustice. That's the intention. Because when anybody hurts, I don't care if they're my nationality or not. They share something much thicker than nationality with me, thicker than blood. They share La ilaha illallah with me. So what if they don't have a beard? So what if they don't pray five times? I'll say it. So what if they haven't fasted 10 years in Ramadan? So what if they listen to music? That's between them and Allah. They say La ilaha illallah, they're my blood. They're thicker than my blood. I share that with them. It's not just a difference in ethnicity. It's even in a difference in how much they practice their deen. Even if they were drunk out of their mind, that's still my brother in Islam. That's still my brother. We forget, we say, no, unless they look like me as a Muslim, if they're Islamic enough by my standards, then they're my brother. No. Who gave you that? Who gave you that self-righteous standard of judgment where you get to decide who's Muslim enough? If somebody's engaged in a sin, then that's sin. But that you get to judge that act or say that act is wrong, but not that person. Judging that person is between them and Allah. I pray that we are able to just take a step back and really direct the pain that we're feeling in a real healthy direction, to do something positive, to be able to think back and just solve something, to address something. And yes, the immediate need are people that are displaced, the people that are in crisis. And it's not just in one place. It's not just what's happening in Afghanistan. There are plenty of places where Muslims are spilling Muslim blood on the earth today, right now, as we speak. And I will dismiss any of those places. What is there even a surprise that there are other places in which non-believers are spilling the blood of Muslims? Because we're not a united people anyway, and we're not united. The Prophet ﷺ promised, you know, other nations will come and feast on us like wolves, packs of wolves. Why would they feast on us? Because we don't stand united. We're easy targets. We're easy feast. So before we complain about who's attacking us and who's not, we don't address the source problem. We don't even see ourselves as one. We don't address that first. Until you have a healthy body, you can't defend yourself. And if the ummah is like one body, let's make this body healthy again. Let's do that again. May Allah Azza wa Jalla really, truly unite our hearts and give us the sense of the right kind of mindset and thinking and guide us to solutions to solve all the crises of the ummah. May Allah Azza wa Jalla help alleviate those that are suffering under any rule in any place in the world. People that share our kalima with us, that Allah Azza wa Jalla give them relief from their suffering, give them safety, give them calm, and allow them to worship Him in a way that is pleasing to Him. May Allah Azza wa Jalla not make us or you by our hands or our tongues a source of harm to other believers. Barakallahu li wa lakum fil Qur'an al-Hakim wa nafa'ani wa iyyakum bil ayati wa dhikri al-Hakim. الحمد لله وكفى والصلاة والسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى خصوصا على أفضلهم وخاتم النبيين محمد الأمين وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. قال الله عز وجل في كتابه الكريم بعد أن أقول أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم إن الله وملائكته يصلون على النبي يا أيها الذين آمنوا صلوا عليه وسلموا تسليما. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما صليت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم في العالمين إنك حميد مجيد. اللهم بارك على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما باركت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم في العالمين إنك حميد مجيد. عباد الله رحمكم الله اتقوا الله إن الله يأمر بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر ولذكر الله أكبر والله يعلم ما تصنعون. أقم الصلاة إن الصلاة كانت على المؤمنين كتابا موقوتا.